Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Todd Albaugh Show, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, over on the board. It is 6 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock on Monday, November 6, 2023. Welcome back into hour number two of the big show. For those of you watching on the stream on Facebook, Twitter, or Twix, as Craig Ferguson calls it, or on YouTube, we've changed our setting a little bit to accommodate our guests this hour. Coming up in just a minute, we have Alex Salutis here. He is a licensed realtor and past board member of the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation. Do you have a historic building or site in your community across Wisconsin? Is it in danger? How can we possibly save it? And what should be aware of? We'll cover all that coming up here at hour two. But first, Mr. Zommers, at 7 past the hour of 1 o'clock, some truly breaking news.
Dun, dun, dun.
appreciate those high-end graphics.
I can just
of all the
better.
Things we have in civic media, that's our breaking news stinger.
Fantastic. For this particular news.
Fantastic. Oh, Lordy, let's ring a cowbell. Well, here, in all seriousness, this is truly breaking news, folks. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Todd Rosiak, the reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I'm not making this up, folks. It ain't April Fool. Craig Counsell is leaving the Brewers to become the manager for the rival Chicago Cubs. Let me say that again. Don't drive off the road. If you're having the big one, sit down. Craig Counsell, who it was rumored would be possibly joining former general manager of the Brewers, David Stern, out at the Mets of New York. And then, of course, he was reported going to interview for the Guardians job in Cleveland in the American League. And out of nowhere, I didn't see one. They kept this thing a secret. But Craig Counsell going to the Chicago Cubs. First part of the story here says nobody embodied the Milwaukee Brewers more than Craig Counsell. He was raised in Whitefish Bay and his father, John, worked for the team throughout Craig's youth. Counsell went on to play 6 seasons in a Milwaukee Brewers uniform, moved into a front office role after retiring, even broadcasting some games. And then in 2015, became the manager. Now, after 9 seasons at the helm, a franchise record 707 victories and 3 National League Central Division titles to his credit, multiple indications are the one-time Brewer lifer is moving on. Counsell, 53. Great age, by the way, Mr. Zommers.
He's a little younger than you.
Oh, gee, thanks. I've been 54 a week, and all of a sudden he's on me. Counsell, 53, according to The Athletic, decided not to return to the Brewers and is instead joining another major league team very close to Milwaukee, the rival Chicago Cubs. We were talking about this over the break. It makes perfect sense because his family is very important to him. I think some of his kids are still in high school. He can basically still live in Milwaukee and coach for the Cubs.
Yes, that's something I didn't think about. I was like, a Cubby? Why would he want to be a Cubby? And then you mentioned that, and I thought, yep, you know what?
Yep.
Sometimes you just got to take care of your family. And he's still a pro baseball coach.
Yeah. So there you go. Well, we'll have more on this, I'm sure, as the day progresses. But again, this is not a joke. It's not an April Fool. Craig Counsell is leaving the Milwaukee Brewers, and according to The Athletic and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, has signed a deal to be the next manager for the Chicago Cubs. Wow. That one hits a little hard today, Mr. Zommers. Well, let's talk about some positivity a little bit here. Joining us here in this half hour, thanks for making room for us, Alex, to bring us this breaking news. Alex Salutis, licensed realtor and also a past board member of the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation. We were talking last night, Alex, and we both kind of have ties to Richland Center, of course, my hometown. And it was your uncle, you said?
Well, actually, my grandfather's brother. There were two Greek boys that came over in the early part of the 19th century, Peter and Louis, and one wound up working at the Trossel Tannery in Milwaukee, which was a beautiful building And the other one wound up going, he saw a postcard on a board in Milwaukee about jobs at the dairy up there, went up there to work at the dairy, and went to this restaurant. And this beautiful woman worked at the restaurant. He wound up working there. Wound up buying the restaurant from her dad and marrying the woman. And that became Louie's Grill in Richland Center. And anybody I've ever talked to that's ever been to Richland Center remembers Louie's Grill. And I remember it from a kid, the long soda fountain counter, the cigar boxes at the front, the homemade pies that Evelyn made. We would frequently go up there for family get-togethers. He had American Legion Meeting Hall in the back of this building on the main street where the community would gather. And then he'd have family get-togethers back there, too. So it's just beautiful people and a wonderful experience.
And growing up there, I mean, there wasn't not many weeks that went by that I didn't go after school to have a piece of the custard pie and a bottle of ski.
There you go.
At Louie's Grill in Richland Center. So as my friend Rob Wheat's fond of saying, it's the Richland Center Mafia. It's like 6 degrees of separation. You can find some link to Richland Center. Of course, Richland Center, the hometown, the birthplace of Frank Lloyd Wright, one of, if not the most renowned architect in world architectural history, certainly here in the United States. And what we're talking about today is this historic preservation. And Alex, really appreciate you coming in and talking about this. I want to kind of take a look at two things. A, just historic preservation across the state of Wisconsin. And then if you could kind of tell this story, because I think it's so fascinating, the more I learned about it, of what's happening here in Madison and a specific instance and how this might be applicable to other parts of the state. As a licensed realtor, someone who has worked in preservation before here in Madison and across the state, is this something as time marches on, right? But in your opinion, are we losing more of these historic buildings and sites quicker or faster right now than ever before? Or is it kind of about the same?
I can't see it speeding up. It's just happening at a good clip. And it really depends on how engaged the community is and what the attitude in City Hall is. But I have not noticed actually, now that I think about it in Madison, I do, up until Mayor Dave, who I like to call Demo Dave, entered office, and also, Kitty Rankin was on staff, I think the city had a good balance between, you know, preserving and rehabilitating landmarks so they could be an integral part and provide a sense of place in new development, and new development. I think there was a happy balance there, but right about the time Demo Dave got elected and Kitty retired, boom, I think there was a dramatic change here. And now at City Hall, the 22 alders, we have one that's on the council. The last time a building was landmarked in the city of Madison. Prior to that, we were averaging about 4 or 5 designations a year. Last 11 years, we've had zero. So
give us a sense for the listeners that, you know, I was at a brief tenure on the city council, Richland Center, and was on the Main Street, was the executive director of Main Street. So I'm somewhat familiar. But for those that might not be, describe, if you could, please, what it means for a building or a site to be landmarked or landmark status. What's involved in that, and what does it mean?
That's a great question. A lot of that depends on how the local ordinance is written. Municipalities can write an ordinance that will protect a building or a resource, and they can define in that ordinance what it is. It's based on Supreme Court case law. There's a Supreme Court case on this. I can't tell you the name of it, but there's a Supreme Court case that said, yes, municipalities can do this. Yes, it serves a public interest. The ordinances vary. In some cities in Wisconsin, they have historic preservation light, and the designation depends on whether or not the owner consents, and if it is designated, the owner can unilaterally revoke that. They can just say, I want to change my name from, you know, landmark to not a landmark, and boom, it's done. Whereas in Madison, there are some standards. Consideration is given to the thoughts of the landlord, but it's up to the council on whether or not it receives landmark designation. And then for it to be rescinded, there are some standards that have to be met. The owner can't just walk in and say, well, I want to change my name. Yeah. I'm no longer landmarked, and it's done. So it depends on how they write that local ordinance to be designated a certified local government and receive state and federal funds to enhance your downtown and enhance your districts. You need to write your laws so that the owner can't unilaterally just say, I'm done. I don't want to designate it. There's certain standards to get that funding in order to do that. So long answer. I hope that helps.
It's very helpful because I think it's important. Before we get into the nitty gritty of this particular instance in Madison, I think it's important to know the background of this. About 2 minutes here before we, after this segment is over, I will come back with more. But I think the key is, a lot of times people hear landmark or historic preservation and they think, oh, well, you're encroaching on, if I own this property, you're encroaching on my right as an owner and I'm going to be limited what I can do with it. But I think it's a broader view than that, isn't it, Alex, that we're trying to preserve things that can never be recreated and to preserve history for future generations in conjunction with the property or landowner. This isn't something to be forced on anyone necessarily.
So a couple of thoughts on that, Todd. One, as I said, the Supreme Court has said it's in the public interest to have these landmarks. Two, it has been shown, and I'm in real estate, the most valuable real estate in these neighborhoods that have the historic integrity, where the properties are well kept and they're authentic. So it's to the owner's benefit to do that. And then three, there's a lot of money available to help with this, and the standards are reasonable. They're not crazy standards. The average person can easily find contractors and maintain their home so it meets the standards in the historic preservation ordinance and potentially get a lot of money in tax credits for doing that.
So here in the city of Madison, again, what we're talking right now to Alex Salutis. He is a licensed realtor and a past member of the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation on the board there. We have this instance in Madison, and we're going to come back and tell this story, which I find interesting but also disturbing. The story of the Old Spring Tavern property. It involves a beautiful historic building, a 150-year-old walnut tree.
250.
Oh, 250. Sorry.
234 by the arborist. The qualified subject matter experts has estimated 234. So
some people look at me and call me 250 years old. Back with more after this. Don't go anywhere. The Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Truth, wherever that may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin and streaming on the Civic Media app. If you don't have it, download it today to your Apple or Android device. Takes less than a minute. It is free, gratis, no dinero. It's what Gail King at CBS calls a deal. That's what she says. 20 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock. Again, breaking news. We will have more on this as the afternoon progresses, but breaking news out of Milwaukee. Now, former Milwaukee Brewer manager Craig Council, according to The Athletic and now the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Craig Council has signed a deal to be the next manager for the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs. Fly the L.
The dark side.
Fly the L.
The dark side. I mean,
what do you think about that? Are you a Brewers fan?
I'm just amazed. I'm gobsmacked.
Right?
I'm just gobsmacked.
But I mean, I give credit to he and his agent. I mean, super cagey. This is like, you know, covert ops type of stuff.
What's the backstory on this?
I can't wait to find out, right?
There's something.
There's always a story. Speaking of that, we have Alex Salutis as our guest this half hour. He's a licensed realtor, past board member of the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation. And speaking of a backstory, we have this property here in Madison, Alex. We're talking about historic preservation across Wisconsin. But I think by telling a specific story, it helps our statewide audience understand what could happen in their area of the state. And so you've got the Old Spring Tavern, which is a beautiful property. If you're not familiar, if you've come into a Wisconsin Badger game and driven on Monroe Street, you've probably driven by it at that little turn by the Nakoma area there. And it's a beautiful stone property. It's been an Airbnb, I think, before, but it's this beautiful property, and there's this beautiful big lot that kind of sits behind it. That's the area we're talking about. Alex, I'll let you kind of pick up the story from there. What the heck happened with this property called the Old Spring Tavern? Why is it in danger, and what the heck is going on in Madison?
Well, how far back do you want to go? I could start in 1854 when it was built. I could start 10,000 years ago when the Ho-Chunk started living on that site.
Right,
so,
right. Very well.
The site of the tavern is noted for many things, but one of them is there was a Ho-Chunk village on the knoll above the tavern, and there was also a burial grounds there. And the Ho-Chunk were smart. They lived there because of the abundance of water and wildlife there. There were springs, really, really healthy springs at the bottom of this hill. And we all know what the state animal is and what our nicknames is. Mm-hmm. Well, this inn was built on the road to the stagecoach route to the southwest corner of the state where lead mining was. And those lead miners were nicknamed, because they were digging into the ground, badgers. So it was a perfect stop because of the water for the horse and oxen on the way there. So the building was built in 1854. The hill is also significant and the location significant because the house is built out of some unique bricks. You rarely see the style of red brick in Madison because the bricks were made on site from the clay located in that hill. And then also the oak trees there were used for the structure of the home. So you have the Ho-Chunk, which lived there, the burial grounds that were there. You've got the clay that was harvested from the hill to make the bricks on site. It operated as an inn until 1895 when it was sold and converted to a single family home. At the time it was built, it was surrounded by rolling pastoral farmland. Mm-hmm. Madison was just barely a dot on the map in the center of the isthmus, and this was way out in the sticks. And in the early 20s, some Madison developers platted a neighborhood out there called Nakoma around the Spring Tavern. And they were actually very smart, because they left a big yard in front of the tavern, which gives it a nice sense of the rolling pastoral site that it used to have. So they created this large lot for it, so you had this nice viewscape of the front of the tavern. So Nakoma came around in the 1920s, was platted. A couple of other things happened along the way. There was this architect from Richland Center. I can't remember his name. I think his initials are FLW. But this architect, believe it or not, was commissioned to design a fence to go around the property as well as along the roadway. Nakoma Road is built on fill pass there. It does not follow the natural curves of the land. So the city filled in some of the springs to create the roadbed for Nakoma. And then on the south side of that, you can see this stone fence. Well, Frank Lloyd Wright designed that, and he also designed the fence.
I didn't know that part about the story. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then the owner in 1925, because it put this beautiful multi-story porch on the backside of the house looking southeast, because at the time, none of the trees that you see there to the southeast were there. The springs and that marsh was healthy and flowing, so trees didn't grow there. You had a spectacular view to the southeast and the rising sunsets. Now when you drive by there, because the springs have been constricted, all of these trees have been built. You can't see the lake, but you could see to the other side of the lake and have beautiful sunrises when that porch was added in 1925. So it would have been glorious to go out the back of the house, stand on this porch, and watch these sunrises. So that happened in the early 1920s. Jump forward 50 years, and in the early 1970s, the city of Madison, in their infinite wisdom, tore down this beautiful building over where the Starbucks is on University Avenue, which was on the, what's that, the route where slaves escaped, but there was a beautiful home there. They tore down there. That precipitated
Underground Railroads?
Yeah. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. There was a house that was a station on the Underground Railroad there at the corner of Blackhawk. I think the mobile station is there. It's where the mobile station is. Used to be a Burger King. Burger King's gone. Before that was this house from the 1800s on the railroad there. Yeah. But they created the Historic Preservation Ordinance, and then they promptly named this one of the first, the Old Spring Tavern, one of the first landmarks because it was so significant to protect it. So that was 1972. And then jump forward, it's had a couple of owners which have preserved it, maintained its integrity. And then last year, a developer, and I work with a lot of developers, mm-hmm. and they come in all stripes, bought it to flip it.
I'm going to stop you right there because we're up against the clock here. No, that's fine. It's fine. We're going to come back. We're going to finish this story. We're going to leave you a little cliffhanger.
Give me a chance.
This property has been bought by a developer. It was split in half. There are people taking care of the historic home, but the lot in this 250-year-old tree are in danger. They want to put a 4,000-plus square foot modern home on this. And is it being done the right way? Did people have a chance to weigh in? Once this thing is done, it's over. What can you do if your neighborhood or area is in jeopardy of this? We'll come back and tell you after this. Don't go anywhere. Alex Lunas, Todd Allball. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. To the Todd Allball Show, pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun on the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin and around the world on the Civic Media app. It is 34 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock in this Monday, November 6, 2023 segment. We are happy to have as our guest this hour, Alex Lunas. He is a licensed realtor and a past board member of the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation, talking about historic buildings, historic sites around the state of Wisconsin. And if this is something in your town, in your community that you're concerned about, I think it's important that we look at this story through the lens of a particular project. And we've picked for this segment for today because, Alex, you've been involved in this, the Old Spring Tavern property here in Madison. You've given us some history right before we went to commercial break there. We set it up that most recently this property, and it's had several different owners over the years, but most recently it was bought by a developer here in town. And you correct me if I'm getting this wrong. It was split in two, essentially, as you said, to flip it. And the house or the building went to one owner, and the back lot, a vacant lot, except for a 250-year-old tree, the back lot has been sold to someone else who wants to build a 4,000 square foot plus home. I've been to the property. I've seen it. And look, I'm no realtor. I'm no developer. But, you know, I was on a city council and a plan commission. And there ain't no way you should be putting a 4,000 square foot house on a hillside where all the runoff is going to go down into the historic building. Am I off on this?
It just boggles my mind that we're where we're at today on this, that the you know, what's up is down and what's down is up, and the sun rises in the west and sets in the east. You know, how this has been twisted and we've gotten where we are today. So,
let me add one quick thing. I want to get your take on this because, again, having been on a city council and a plan commission, I historically have been someone and worked in government before who said, you know what, I'm pro landowner rights. I think if someone owns a piece of property, they should, within reason, be able to do what they want to with that property and what it's zoned for, what it's intended for, right? But we're talking about, and this is something that frustrated me in my time in government.
Two attorneys, highly successful attorneys, bought this with the knowledge.
So here you have a situation, and this happens all the time, all across Wisconsin. People will buy a property, a building, or a vacant lot with the intent to use it for something other than what it's currently zoned for legally. But they buy it and say, well, we'll get the city council or the county board, whomever, to change it. And I've always said to people, when I was on city council and planning commission, you should have put the offer in contingent upon this. Your poor planning does not necessitate an emergency on my part.
I've worked with a lot of developers, and I've never seen a developer do it any other way where when they make an offer on developable land and they want to change the use, that the offer isn't contingent on approval of the new use. It's in industry practice and common sense, and you're putting your money at risk buying a piece of property. You know, zoning laws are in place for the public interest, so you have some predictability about what is going to happen around you, and that somebody just can't come in and plop down a toxic waste dump next to you or a strip club or whatever have you. You zoning laws serve a public purpose, and it's just a good lesson for anyone that's buying a property that if you plan to change the use, you want to do your due diligence before you sign that offer to purchase on it. And if not, put in there the contingencies for you to be able to do what you want and get approval before you have to turn over the money.
Let's get this issue of this 250-year-old tree out of the way, first of all, because I don't want to belabor this because, I mean, look, the world revolves and life moves on. I've been a conservationist all my life. I was a sixth-generation owner of a family farm, you know, but I wouldn't call myself, quote-unquote, a tree hugger, but I think—
This one's special.
But we have a 250-year-old walnut in a historic place. I think that does take consideration, and I want to be sure I get this part right. There's no arborist who's looked at this and said, oh, well, look, it's a diseased tree. It's going to have to be taken down within a year or two anyway. Quite to the contrary.
There are just a whole number of things there I want to speak to. One, the applicant said that they've hired arborists, multiple arborists, and they're working to preserve the tree based on that. But they've been asked multiple times to see the reports and the recommendation, and they've refused to provide them. We have no idea if they've talked to an arborist and what the arborist said. Generally speaking, the neighborhood hired because the city didn't step in and say, we want you to give us, you know, these reports, and the applicant didn't provide the reports. The neighborhood hired a certified arborist who has a certification in the specialty of doing risk assessments and mitigation plans. And he looked at the tree and provided a report and said it's vigorous and healthy as far as he can see. It's the fall. He said the best time is to assess this is in the spring and summer when there are leaves on the tree. It's lost its foliage. He said the best time to assess the health. But everything he can see now, the tree is healthy, and his recommendation is that construction fencing be put up at the critical root zone line, which is basically where the canopy of the tree ends, about 52 feet from the trunk, and that there be no construction activity within that, and that there be no house within that. You don't dig into that critical root zone. Well, the house takes up about 40% of that.
Right.
And then you've got construction equipment driving around, compacting it. And this particular species of tree, according to the arborist, has a lower tolerance for those types of activities. Some tree species are hardier, and this one is more susceptible from damage from that. So we have nothing from the applicants to show the impacts, and a certified arborist has said this is bad news.
So again, to me, I would consider that. That's a big deal for me personally. I know there are people listening who are
It violates a city law.
Well, there you go. And now that's something I know there are people there, even though I agree with this part, there are people out there like, look, it's a tree, move on. I recognize there's that feeling out there. I want to get to what you just said when we talk about city laws and ordinances, because again, as a former alder, as a former plan commission member in Richland Center, you know, those types of things are universal. It doesn't matter what community you're in. When you're going to have an applicant to change zoning, to change use, you have to notify the people around that property to say, look, this is going to affect you. And it appears that the city of Madison can't confirm that they properly notified people to come to this public meeting, which, by the way, is tonight, correct?
Yes. That's a joke. So there were two previous hearings on this scheduled. The people that were entitled to receive notice of both of those hearings. No notice was received of this hearing by anyone that was asked. Everybody was asked. There were only two people that were entitled to receive notice that haven't been asked. One is the owners of the property, and the other one is the University of Wisconsin. It went to some address at some big building. There's nobody's name on it, but they own, the UW happens to own this vacant land across the street called the Arboretum, and they are entitled to a notice. But all of the other people on the list were polled. Not one of them received a notice. And get this, the U.S. Postal Service has this really cool service, which I use too, that will scan all your mail and send you an email in the morning before you have your first cup of coffee.
I didn't know
and this. You can open up your email and see what trash, I mean mail, is going to be in your mailbox today and if there's anything you should, you know, you want to get. But they have a digitized service, and one of the recipients uses that service, and they went back to when the notice was supposedly sent, and there's nothing in the digital record from the Postal Service that that notice was delivered to them. And then the preservation planner said, well, here's the invoice for it. And the file is titled printing invoice. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Well, you open it up and guess what it says? Printing order. And there's nothing in there that shows charges or postage or amount due. It says, here's the printing order for this. It is I just don't get it.
Yeah. It's very confusing. And again, what I don't, is the Plan Commission this meeting tonight?
Which Landmarks Commission
Landmarks,
does this.
Landmarks Commission is meeting tonight. That's the urgency of this thing. And again, there is a process. And what I can't understand, and again, we're talking to Alex Salutis. He is a licensed realtor here in Madison, a past board member.
Let's talk about the process.
Madison Trust for Historic Preservation. There is a process that is a due process here for this. And walk us through a couple of these things. I don't understand what the rush is here. Why don't we just follow the process?
Well, the rush is because the applicant and the developer have been waiting 2 years to get this approved.
2 years.
That's in January of last year, the developer asked the preservation planner, when can you tell me if you're going to recommend this for approval?
Right.
The neighborhood doesn't find out about it until he submits his application, which is like in July of this year.
Yeah.
They know nothing about it. So the staff has dozens, if not hundreds, of phone calls and emails between the developer and the owner over the last year and a half. And then they submit their application. And then 2 business days before the first hearing, the preservation planner tells the public what she recommends. And
it seems a little odd.
She told the developer a year and a half ago what was up. And the public finds out like 2 days before the hearing, which gives you a lot of time to respond and prepare and get in expert testimony. But that's not due process. It's horrible.
Quick phone call here. We have a caller here in Madison calling in. Gary, appreciate listening to the show as always. Gary, what say you in terms of this issue of historic preservation in this particular site here in Madison?
Yes, good afternoon. There is another meeting tonight on another historic preservation issue adjoining the First Settlement neighborhood, the Brayton Lot, which has been a public parking lot since 1953. had been a plan had been developed by the First Settlement Neighborhood, Capital Neighborhoods, for a mix of 4 to 10-story buildings, and the planning department is asking for a reconsideration of the change to the downtown height map to propose it all be 10 stories. This will cast shadow in each direction for blocks, whereas it may limit the number of owner occupancy potentials that the site would have. The meeting tonight is at St. John's Church.
Okay.
It is available via the website of the planning department and for Capital Neighborhoods.
Appreciate it.
7, at least.
Gary, you're a rock. Thank you for everything you've done and everything you do. Gary, thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, I appreciate that. People like Gary, people like yourself, there are other folks here in Madison who have been so adamant about preservation. And because once it's gone, it's gone. I mean, it sounds trite to say, but it's true. I mean, these are architectural sites. These are historic sites that once they're developed, once these buildings are gone, you can't replicate them, right, Alex?
That's right. And not every, you know, to get the historic designation, it really needs to be special. It's not like we're walking around indiscriminately asking for a building or a structure or a site to be designated. It needs to meet certain criteria. It needs to be special, and it creates a sense of community. I mean, if you can imagine Madison exclusively with all these anodyne new 4 to 6 or 8 story buildings everywhere, you know, imagine Madison without the Capitol, without the Memorial Union, without Bascom Hall. These are all landmarks. These are all beautiful buildings that add to the sense of place. Madison, without those, would be gone. So,
and you replicate that. I mean, well, I work for the legislature and Congress. I had the opportunity to travel around the state. You could say the same thing in Superior, in Green Bay, in Milwaukee, in La Crosse, Eau Claire, Richland Center, all points in between. Once these buildings are gone, they're gone. We're going to come back and wrap up with Alex Salutis talking a little bit more about what you could do in your community, particularly here in Madison tonight. Don't go anywhere. We'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Town Hall Bowl Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, I'm impressed. If Gary is a big fan, I got to listen to you.
Welcome back. Yes, Alex saying Gary's a big fan. See? Shout out to Gary Tipler. Thanks for calling in, Gary. Appreciate that. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. That is 10 minutes away from Matt Flynn Direct. Always going to learn something. Going to have a chuckle as well. Taking you to the front lines of history being made. Matt Flynn Direct immediately after the news at the top of the hour. Right now, our guest is Alex Salutis. He is a licensed realtor and past board member of the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation, talking about this site here in Madison. Alex, just 2 or 3 minutes here to wrap things up. What can people do, A, in your communities across Wisconsin? Who should be talking to you for historic sites? But as importantly or more importantly right now, what should folks in Madison do for this particular site?
Good question, Todd. This particular application has huge significance, but basically what... if the city approves this, they're saying is landmark designation means nothing, and you can build anything you want on a landmark, and it just renders the ordinance meaningless. The proposal, briefly again, is there's a landmark site which includes 2 tax parcels, and one has been sold off, and it was the front yard of this inn. And this couple from Minneapolis paid $500,000 for this vacant lot, and they want to build a 4,200-square-foot home in the front yard of this beautiful landmark from the 1800s. So you want to there's a hearing at 5 before the Landmarks Commission. You want to register in opposition. If you go to the city's website and dig around, you should be able to find that. Register in opposition to... you can testify at the public hearing. If you go to my Facebook page, there's some good information there that can help you prepare the comments and the link. If you go to my Facebook page, Alex Salutos, S-A-L-O-U-T-O-S, you'll find the link and some talking points for your comments and the link to register.
If you'd like, Mr. Thomas, we can put up the link to your Facebook page. Is that okay, Alex?
Well, just Google or whatever on Facebook, put in Alex Salutos, and you'll find it.
All right, great. And it starts what time tonight?
5 p.m.
And where's the site? Where's the meeting? Oh, everything is, I'm not used to all the Zoom stuff, but okay.
Very good. And you want to look at Legistar number 79099. So if you go to the city's website and go to their Legistar function, it's Legistar number 79099.
Well, if you're in the city of Madison or Dane County, I encourage you to participate in this because the Old Spring Tavern property, right on Monroe Street there, it is historic. Once this is kind of the site behind it is gone, it's gone. And not to mention, we didn't even get into the water runoff issues that this could, because this vacant site is on a hillside, which I think would you know, if I were the property owner of the inn itself, I'd be a little PO'd.
Yeah. I mean, the water is issue. The tree is an issue. But they're compared to just putting a 4,200 square foot home in the front yard of this thing. I mean, those are big issues. But that is huge.
Right.
What they want to do.
And if people across the state of Wisconsin, join your local historic preservation organization. I mean, I think a lot of people think, oh, this is just some retired old women giving tours of houses. No, I mean, this is important stuff. These are saving properties, saving buildings for the next generation.
Yeah, we'll talk about this some more with you if you have me back.
We will. You have a chair here anytime, Alex Salutis.
You're a rock. You're a hero.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Todd. To all the folks working on this historic preservation. We appreciate you very much. Welcome anytime. Let's go right now at 1:54 right now. Let's go up to our friend and colleague Phil Nee in Richland Center, Wisconsin. Phil, thanks for taking the time. And the reason Phil is joining us, if you have not heard the breaking sports news across the state of Wisconsin, that Craig Council, now former manager of the Brewers, has announced he is headed towards and going to be the manager of the Chicago Cubs. Phil, what was your reaction when you heard this?
Certainly, I am dumbfounded, Todd. This is amazing. I had a feeling it was going to go somewhere else. I was thinking Mets all along because David Stearns is there and they're friends. I don't think this was on the radar. No one mentioned this one as a possibility at all.
Well, those who don't know, Phil's lovely and talented wife, June, is a longtime Bears fan and Cubs. I want to know, did June have anything to do with the negotiations?
I don't think so.
All right, very good.
She likes the Bears more than the Cubs.
God love her.
She roots for the underdog. Maybe that's why she got a hold of me. I don't know.
No. But in all seriousness, you're right. I mean, no one that I know, I mean, with all the internet and the online stuff, it's unbelievable how tight they kept this and were able to have this kind of, I mean, went to the Guardians, went to the Mets, and here all along, he was looking at the Cubs. This is unbelievable. To pull this off, Phil, is a logistics just crazy.
I know it, because normally somebody leaks. There's an anonymous source somewhere, and I just can't believe it. But I'm kind of mad. I really am.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like when Brett Favre went to the Vikings. It's kind of a real slap in the face, really.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm all for people getting what they're worth in the open market, but to do it against your arch rival, it stings. And I said to Zomers before that we went on the air today, I said, you know what? I bet it comes down to his family, because he has a couple of kids, I think, still in high school. They can basically still live in Milwaukee, and he can coach it at Chicago. And I get that, but man alive. Your arch rival, Phil?
He made a point, though. He wanted to be the highest-paid manager in baseball, and I get that. He was managing some stumble bums that made more money than him. I get that, But $40 million over 5 years, that's a hefty amount. Highest-paid manager in history up to this point. It'll probably change.
I've been on the air, so I haven't been able to see it. So $40 million over 5 years, that's what the reported contract is?
That's the reported contract. That's correct.
Whoa.
And who's going to be the next Brewer manager will be the next thing debated.
Any thoughts?
Maybe Todd Allball.
That's what I was going to say.
No. Well, unless, they want to pay me $40 million, I'm in.
I bet you do it. I'll be your assistant.
We'll split it. I mean, look, Phil and I have worked together for a long time. You've been at WRCO and Richland Center, WRCE, 37 years, Phil? You've met Bob Uecker. You and I were just at a Brewers game here a month ago or so.
Yes, we were.
You've seen a lot of the Brewers, and it just hurts because the Brewers have gone through such great times under Craig Council, and this is a little personal, Phil.
It is. I'm a little angry about it, and so is David Ross, because I don't know if he saw it coming either. So they hired Craig Council and immediately fired David Ross.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And the game that you and I were at was Cubs and Brewers, final game of the regular season, too. And the Cubs were kind of listless that day, weren't they?
They certainly were. Well, it's going to be, can you imagine the welcome, quote-unquote, for Craig Counsell in the first game at AmFam Field next year?
Ooh. Boy, they're going to let him have it.
And, you know, maybe rightly so.
Yes, you're right, man.
Well, Phil, for guys like us, just when we think we saw everything, this comes along.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Phil, and your thoughts. Again, Craig Counsell to the Cubs. More on this across Civic Media in the moments and hours to come. Stay tuned now for our good friend, Matt Flynn, and Matt Flynn Direct. For all of us here at Civic Media, the Todd Allball Show, we'll see you tomorrow. Keep banging your drum.